ever Bristol City podcast. We're actually doing this almost 24 hours after the game at Ashton Gate last night, which finished City 0, Swansea City 1, and an unenviable, unwanted record-making 12th league game without a win. Very, very disappointing having a record like that. Joining me this evening or today, whatever, Ian, Les and Mark. Boys, I come to each of you. Quick resume of the game as they normally do. I'll start with you, Ian. 30 seconds. What are your thoughts on last night?
I thought the first half particularly was an improvement on last season. But we're nowhere near where we need to be.
That's fair enough. Yep. Mark, your thoughts?
City blitzed Swansea in the first 15 to 20 minutes, peppering their goal with shots, but they couldn't find the finish. Swansea scored against a run of play and gradually found their way into the game. And City faded badly at the end, but performances are better. Better as a unit, better out of possession. Results will come if they continue to play with the same mentality.
I agree with that. And Les, your thoughts? I think you said a few moments ago, missed opportunity before we went live, but like to expand on that as you saw it.
Yeah, big missed opportunity against a poor side going through transition. Swansea were missing their entire, their centre-backs and Bennett Cabango, and had a full-back or wing-backs filling in. And they're the kind of games we really need to be winning to get that pressure off our backs or off Pearson's back. So a very, very disappointing result, even if the performance was better.
Yeah, no, I think that's true. I mean, for my part, I thought the opening 15 to 20 minutes was some of the best football that we've seen. We've knocked it around really, really well. And if that effort of Martins goes in to make it 1-0, I think it ends up being a totally different game. But nasty little side with their time wasting. But clearly, you said there, Les, about they're going through transition. Well, Russell Martin's got them playing his way inside about four matches, and our transition seems to be taking a bit longer than that. Let's look at the starting lineup. Ian, there were changes, but nothing significant. What were your thoughts on the team that took the field last night?
I would have made more changes and I would have freshened it up. Particularly, I'd have left Alex Scott out because I think we need to be careful with the kid. He's 18 today, and if we're not careful, he's going to get kicked and whacked, and then he's going to miss games, and it will get difficult. Now I know he has to play first team football to be able to play first team football, but I like the idea of dipping him in and out like Ferguson did with Ryan Giggs and Ronaldo. And they didn't turn out too bad, did they? So I didn't like that. We've got a tactical problem that we need to sort out before we play Cardiff, because if we go to Cardiff with that side, we'll get battered. And the issue is the fullbacks. Every side's get out ball. If you want to watch the Swansea game back, you'll see diagonal passes right to left, left to right, and a player stood on the touchline, winning a header and heading the ball into play, and it's not our play. And this is the problem when you've got two fullbacks. One's, I think, 5'5", 5'6", the other one's 5'8". So I'll go on and be height-obsessed again. I'd like to see Viner and Pring come in as wing-backs, and I'd like to see us play a third centre-back, i.e. Nathan Baker. I mean, he's tailor-made to deal with Aidan Flint, who scored two goals again today.
He did, yeah.
Aidan Flint and Kiefer Moore. And we've really got to get the tactical side right, and we need, I'd probably go with King, James and Masengo in midfield.
Well, let's look forward.
Play the same two up front, but we have to be... If we go to Cardiff and we don't physically compete, particularly from set pieces, we'll get mullered.
Yeah, no, I would agree with that. I mean, Les, Masengo got the vote coming in, and I thought Masengo and James were two of our better performers. They both stayed on for the full 90 minutes. But, you know, and Masengo, to me, he looked to be showing flashes of the form that he showed when he first joined 2 years ago. That looked to be a useful midfield pairing, but I thought Alex Scott probably was his most least effective yesterday. How did you see that midfield shaping up?
Yeah, I thought Masengo would come in for King because I went to Reading on the Tuesday, and when Masengo came on, I thought he was excellent. The problem with King when he plays as centre midfield, he's not very agile. He hasn't got much movement. And I think Masengo brings that energy and that ability to cover across the pitch. And I thought he played well yesterday. Scott, I would have played him simply because I'm not sure what other options there are really for those wide attacking players at the moment. But no, I thought Masengo was very good. And I think him and James played well together. And I think they complemented each other nicely. And for large chunks of the game, they won that midfield battle. So I'd like to continue with that going forward. But no, I thought Masengo played well yesterday.
Yeah. Mark, I'll come to you for, the goal that proved to be decisive. Despite all our good early play, lots of high press, it was really good. And a great crowd, 20,500 on a Friday night when it's on television. But the goal was a classy finish, but it was more sloppy defending. Again, Masengo and one other lost the ball on the halfway line. But how did you see the goal, Mark?
De Silva took a throw in. So he's halfway inside our half, throws it down the line. Swansea player heads it straight back. And Pring and Masengo get in each other's way. Atkinson then pushes up to try and tidy up. And Perel goes, what's his name?
Perro
goes past him. He just goes past him. So he's behind Atkinson. First time I've seen him beaten on the ball. And then he shoots for the near post and it comes out. And I think Simpson's looking to block, but the ball's shot straight back out. So nobody knows where it's coming. And he just whacks the ball back in the other corner. So it was an excellent finish, but a very sloppy goal.
And he's got two goals in three games, is it? And he cost him £1 million? You know,
yeah, just... he scored the consolation goal the other night when he came on as a sub because they dropped Jamal Lowe for him. And yeah, he's a Dutch player. I don't know his background, but I just know that he's Dutch. But yeah, it was a very good finish, and that was the only difference was the finishing on the night because you know we had 15 shots on goal, which
five
is fantastic.
On target, yeah.
Five on target. I think they had 10 and 4. Mm. Both sides were guilty of you know missing the target when well placed. I think Jamie Patterson missed a couple. And Andreas Weimann puts the ball over the bar, unfortunately, more than he gets it on target.
Yeah.
But that was the only difference. But it was so unfortunate for a side. We hadn't made any mistakes. What I'm so impressed about was out of possession, how we tackled and won the ball back, especially from Masengo. The freedom that gave James to go forward, especially, I think, early on when Swansea tried to play out from the back. And I think it led to two attacks. The ball went straight to James. He played it to play the 1-2 of Alex Scott and had a shot. I mean, he had three or four shots last night, James, and I think he surprised people. But
yeah, nice little header as well that he put in.
Yeah, I thought that was Chris Martin.
Which was a good cross, but it was James where he stooped
down.
Yeah,
Martin played a wonderful ball around the corner for Alex Scott, and he got it to the byline.
Yeah.
And, you know, the header
that was
the
Scott's
header
major contribution. Yeah.
Yeah.
Ian Atkinson, we've got another Adam Webster in the making, but again, twice yesterday, if I recall correctly, he took the ball out of defence, looked to be on a run, doesn't get his head up. Yeah, and you talk about players being bullied. Could you see, your comments on Atkinson, and could you see, because of the physicality, Callas being partnered by Baker next week? So two questions there for you, Ian.
Do I think he'll get bullied? No. What you've got to remember with Atkinson, he was playing for Oxford last season. So it's a step up in class for him. Now, whereas last season he could bring the ball out and go past three players, it was all a big surprise because centre-backs don't do that in the third division. This season, players will just take the ball off him. Now, Atkinson doesn't get his head up early enough, but there's no one there supporting him saying, give me the ball. And if you had a player like Brian Tinian in midfield, he'd be doing just that. Give me the ball. I'd play Baker, yes, but as well as Atkinson and Callas. I don't think it was an instead of. Oh, I mean, you could do that because Baker is an ideal guy to compete with Kiefer Moore, Flint from set pieces, Pack's taking long throws for them and all the rest of it. So, you know, as I said previously, we need that physicality. And I hope Pearson can see that. I think, no, he made a mistake last night and everybody makes those. So I wouldn't criticise him for it. And he was probably, I would guess, up against the best team we played so far.
Yeah. No, I think they probably were. So, yeah.
You know, I'm not saying they were brilliant, but then again, neither were we. But the issue for me, and no doubt we'll come on to it, is scoring goals.
Yeah, because I know you've done some numbers on that, Ian. So we'll come to that when we've done the wrap of the game.
Very worrying. I've also done some numbers on what I think we made out of the game in ticket sales last night on top of season tickets, and they're quite gratifying.
Positive. Yeah, no, it is. Well, I said a moment ago, it was good to have that sort of crowd on a Friday night when people quite easily have sat on in front of their TVs. Les, a plus point from the last two games has been Cameron Pring. It was interesting listening to Nigel talking about his chat with him pre-season where Cameron had said he didn't seem part of it. He'd been out on loans. He's actually 8 loans, 4 to league clubs. He's actually older than Jay De Silva. And I thought he gave that physicality on the left side. And I love some of those crosses that he was putting in, whipped balls, instead of getting it right to the byline, but curling away and on the edge of the penalty area. We didn't get anybody on the end of them, but Pring was a positive, not only of last night, but of the last two games, really, wasn't he?
Yeah, and he's quite direct as well. He likes to get down the wing and get the balls in. I thought his crosses were very good indeed. I think the problem that Pring has is that he's not fit enough. He went off against Reading after, 60-odd minutes because it was blowing, and it was the same yesterday. And I think he needs to get up to speed with the rest of the squad because we looked a lot less threatening without him on the pitch. And it's good that we've got a player who can actually cross a ball because we haven't had that apart from Elias in quite some time. And I think over time he's going to end up as our first choice left back. And I think he'll overtake De Silva, who, in my opinion, is going backwards.
Yeah.
And I will be amazed if Pring doesn't start at left back on next Saturday. I think he'll be left back, and I think Atkinson and Baker will play in the middle, and I wouldn't surprise me if he put Callas at right back.
So he doesn't change the system because he doesn't want to play. I went to the Senior Reds lunch on Thursday, and somebody said, why don't you play three? He said, I play the system I play. I'm in favour of 4-4-2 or 4-2-3-1 or 4-1-3, whatever it is. But he said, I haven't got the players to play that. So if he can stick to his 4-4-2, as you've just said, Les, Callas, Baker, Atkinson and Pring, that is physical, isn't it? Yeah, and
it's physical, but you've got to remember, like, when we played Blackpool yesterday, when they go long, these teams, they're going to De Silva a lot of the time. And what they'll do is on Saturday, Kiefer Moore will just go on to the left-hand side. He'll stick himself to De Silva, or Collins will do the same thing. And let's be honest, if that happens, one of our centre-backs will go across. Moore will potentially win the head anyway, and then suddenly we've got our whole defence that's completely out of shape. Do you know what I mean? So I don't see. I'll be amazed if De Silva plays on Tuesday. I don't think Saturday. I don't think he played well yesterday, and I think Pring has come in and offered us something that we haven't had for a while, which is an attacking fullback. You know, neither of our fullbacks like to get over the halfway line.
No,
and I think Pring has done very well, and I hope he maintains it. He just needs to get fitter. He needs to get fitter.
Yeah, I mean, I think with Simpson, I think he's got the ability, but I just think his legs have gone. And I think De Silva, again, I don't know what's the matter with the bloke. He's not doing it. Mark, our strikers yesterday played with Andreas and Martin. Again, I found this hard to believe, actually. Nigel said at the Senior Reds lunch on Thursday that the fastest...
The mystery guest, I heard he was.
The mystery guest, yes, that's right. Yeah, I was persuaded to go by somebody and I was thinking, who's it going to be? I told you that. Anyway, the fastest player on the recordings that they have during the Reading game, any one sprint, was Chris Martin. I just find that incredible that he was the quickest player because you know, he had a good game against Reading, clearly, but he missed that easy chance. He's not the solution, is he? And the only backup we've got is Louis Britton, isn't it, in that big man role up front?
I think that the problem is, yeah, he's not a fantastic finisher. He can play the false role to bring the other three in. But the problem is he was marked out of the game from, especially in the second half. You know, there was two or three defenders around him. You don't want to play balls up to his head for flick-ons because Swansea just read it easily. And his role diminished as the game went on. And there's no like for like, unless you have somebody like Louis Britton. I don't know if there's anybody else in the club who can play that role, you know, to take the hits with his back to goal, to feet, to play in players. I mean, like I said, in the first half, he had room. He had to drop deeper to play in Alex Scott. That's what he needed to do. But if you're playing balls up to his head all the time, that's a complete waste because he was just marked out of the game. And you can really see his equalising as the game went on because he was left on the pitch. The quality of the crosses, there just wasn't any after Pring and Scott went off. Because of the rustiness of Semenyo, unfortunately, I think that Palmer would have been a much better choice. But there you go. But yeah, I can see what he wants to do, but where's the plan B? You need a like for like change if you're still going to play that way, because there's nobody with that physicality up front. Yeah. That's the problem. Yeah. That's why he's persistent with that. He won't play Naki Wells.
Yeah, well, and we're talking physicality, obviously, there, Mark, not height. A couple of things that people have said on the I'll call it the feed that's coming through. Cookie said, I was pretty peed off when Pring came off yesterday, lost all sense of creativity. One of the things that I noticed at the end of the first half, and Pring was on my side in front, the Lansdowne lower, he was blowing a bit, yeah? And I think he was absolutely knackered when he came off, yeah? Because he'd lost that effectiveness going forward. And Ian, next question for you. The substitutions, by the time we got to the end of the game, it was a bit like some of the matches we saw towards the end of last season where we lost all shape and we didn't finish strongly, did we? Would you agree with that?
The second half, we weren't as good as we were in the first because we didn't take the opportunities we created in the first. That's why we didn't win the game. Looking at it, you've got to remember Cameron Pring is a left back, right? He's not a left winger, and it's a completely different role. So if Pearson wants to stay with this, I don't know, 4-5-1, 4-4-2, put O'Dowda on the left wing in front of him if he's available, because he's another one that was meant to be available for the Middlesbrough game. And we haven't seen him since he got kicked against Blackpool, not even on the bench. Now, Nigel Pearson says that him and Joe Williams are training. I think they're terrified of playing Joe Williams.
In case he breaks down.
Yeah. You could put him on the bench and say, well, you know, you could do 30 minutes or whatever. But unless you're playing game time, it's difficult for him. He's obviously done all the pre-season stuff, but he only played 60 minutes in pre-season. So if you want to go 4-5-1 against Cardiff, and as I said, I wouldn't. But if you're going to go 4-5-1, then I think you'd play Pring and Viner as your fullbacks and say, right, you're in the side to defend, so defend. And then you can play possibly Semenyo wide right and O'Dowda wide left. And then you can play three midfield players, one of which can be attacking. So you could put Byman in there or you could put Scott in there. In the same way when we played 3-5-2, we did with Patterson and Byman at the start of last season. And I said I didn't really like it. Because it, at the start of last season, you know, you've got to remember we had.
Well, we were doing right. We were doing okay out to about the early weeks of November, really, weren't we? It wasn't a lot going wrong, although we weren't looking impressive.
We have to be patient. I mean, Pring is playing his first football in the Championship.
Yeah.
And it's a very tough division. And anybody thinks, oh, well, there's not that much difference from League One. Take it from me, there really is. And it's okay saying I think Pring's fit. He goes galloping up and down the line, but there's galloping up and down the line in League One in the under-23s, and there's galloping up and down the line in the Championship. And I think if you had bring an O'Dowda, whether O'Dowda plays centre of a three in midfield or whether he plays left wing.
Well, left of left.
I think...
Yeah.
Well, left wing. You could, if it's a 4-5-1, that's 4-5-1 when you're defending, so it gives you balance, and 4-3-3 when you're attacking. So O'Dowd and Semenyo would join in with Martin. And if Vyman's playing in midfield, he can join in as well. Or you go for a player that is more of a, what I'll call a midfield player. I mean, I'd have Masengo and James there to start with. Now, it's a choice then. Do you put Andy King in? Do you put Vyman in there? Do you put O'Dowd in there? But we've got to be able to dominate possession, because if we defend deep and let Cardiff ping the big diagonal and punt balls in the box, we're going to get hammered.
Yeah.
And we just have to be realistic about where we are. But if we can have a side like that and absolutely dominate possession, win first balls, second balls and whatever else, and you've
then
got
they won't get the opportunity. The they pitch. Won't get the opportunity to put the exactly. balls in to their they big were, men. Yeah,
they were 2-0 down against Peterborough, and then Peterborough sat in their own penalty area for the last 10-15 minutes.
Cost them the game,
and it cost them the 2 points because Flint scored 2 goals because he would just stand in the box. And we did it for years, pumped the ball in, and he's really difficult to stop.
Yeah,
so you've got to make him
on the end of it.
Start from a lot deeper. Don't give away daft throwing opportunities, daft free kicks, so that they can put the ball in the box a lot and make them go long to more and watch the flick on. But if he pulls wide, he's okay. Bring in Viner. Like most people, may struggle a bit against more out wide, but at least they can shove him about a bit to stop him getting a clean header on it.
No, that's
and,
true.
And I think that's what we need to go over there and have our tactics absolutely spot on. But that side that started against Swansea, I'm ever so sorry. You go over
wouldn't
with
cut
that
it.
And
you'll get smashed.
Cut it.
And we know how Cardiff are going to play. I mean, Cardiff are still playing the same way that they did under Neil Warnock, reading Neil Warnock's book, My Kind of Club, which is a really good read to anybody if they're thinking of looking for a good football. But Les, substitutions. Naki came on. He was on the sideline for about 6 minutes. The ball just wouldn't go out of play. And then Semenyo came on. I mean, PBG has said on here, excuse me, Semenyo running down blind alleys and Wells added zilch. The substitutions, it was all a bit of a mess come the final whistle, wasn't it? Yeah, would you agree with that?
Yeah, but we haven't got much in the way of creativity, have we? The only one who maybe could have come on is Palmer. But yeah, Semenyo, look, he hasn't played for God knows how long because of his injury. And let's be honest, he's not that good anyway. He has scored, what, I think I read 2 goals in 50 games for us, and both of them came off his backside. He doesn't create a huge amount. His decision-making is atrocious. He hasn't got a footballing brain at all. And I don't think he is good enough for a side that needs reliable players who are going to perform their job in the team. And, you know, I understand why he brought him on. He can beat people, yet he doesn't try.
But
and
he bulldozes
them.
His way through, though, doesn't he? But then there's no end
he didn't,
product.
He couldn't cross the ball.
He can't cross the ball, can he?
Well, he can't cross the ball. But he didn't even try and beat people yesterday, which I couldn't understand. The whole point is you beat your man, or you try and get past your man, and then against tired fullbacks or wingbacks, especially wingbacks who've been up and down the pitch for the old game. And I thought he was awful, but look, he has come back from an injury. And yeah, King came on because look, he's got height, hasn't he? That was a final sub he made, and he's good in the air. I would have probably bought Palmer on, but I think it just shows that we're missing a quality wide forward and a centre forward, because Wells, you know, Wells is a fox in the box, but that's all well and good. If you ain't got people who are going to get it in the box, or people who are going to play the through balls against a defence that's sitting very, very narrow and deep, he's not going to really have the opportunity, is he?
No.
So
no.
I think it just emphasised the need for us to get into this get something out of this transfer market, and ideally a wide forward and a striker. Because Chris Martin, you were talking about Chris Martin earlier. I think Chris Martin's a very, very good player. I think he's had a very good season so far. Like I think Mark said, there was one stage yesterday that when we went long to him, he had four defenders on him, four Swansea players. They kicked him out of the game as well, and he got no support from the ref. And I don't think he can play three games in a week either. So no. I think we need that wide forward, and we need someone who can just take some of the workload off him. Naki Wells, I don't think, has got a future here. I don't think he suits the way Pearson wants to play. And if you said to me, get rid of Wells and get Michael Smith in from Rotherham, I'd snap your hands off. Whether it will happen, I very much doubt it, because no one's going to pay the wages for Wells, are they?
Well, that's the other thing. That is the other thing with Wells. And if you give him away for, say, he's written in the books, Dan, he's halfway through his time here. You know, if somebody offered $2 million for Naki Wells, it's not a $3 million loss because they've written it down, but it's going to free up wages. And that is clearly a big thing.
If someone came in and said, well, we want Naki Wells, we're not going to pay you a fee, we'll want him for a free, I'd say take him, because you're going to be saving a load on wages. What's he going to be on, between 15 and 20k a week, you would have thought?
I would think easily 20.
So I'm sorry, for someone like him, he's got no resale value anyway, because by the time he's got a year left in his contract, he's going to be what, 31, 32? 32.
No, he's 31 so, now.
It's 31 now. So he'll be 32, so he's not going to be going for millions anyway.
No,
if someone comes in and says, well, take him off your hands, we don't want to pay a penny, we should say thank you very much, because the wages will give us the opportunity to get someone
chance
else in.
To get two probably chance to get two players, because the renegotiated terms of Baker and Vyman, you know, they could be both on 12 grand a week now, yeah? And Naki could be costing 24. Maybe that's a bit high, but no, you make a good point. Mark, one person who didn't have a lot to do yesterday, other than pick the ball out of the net, was Dan Bentley, widely tipped as one of our, well, widely tipped, thought by some to be one of our saleable assets. Sheffield United have got off to an awful start. They've sold their goalkeeper, I think, is it Ramsdale, to Arsenal. Bentz didn't have anything to do. Do you think there's a chance he might go out through the door? And, you know, does he inspire confidence at the back? Is that another reason why we're conceding silly goals, soft goals?
I don't think so. I mean, he's sometimes prone to errors of judgment, like he showed against Bournemouth last year when he had really soft hands and let the ball squirm past him. And some of his passing out from the back's been poor, but he's a very good shot stopper. Looks better in the air. What he's decided to do this season is, rather than risk catching it, he tries to punch it long. If he runs into traffic, he may, you know, notice punches with both hands, doesn't he? Tries to clear it as far as possible. So I don't see anybody coming in for him, really. I think he's good but not outstanding, not good enough to go to another club. I think, like you said, you look at some like Sheffield United, they have got money to spend if they wanted to replace Aaron Ramsdale. But I don't think a Premier League club would take a risk on him. He wouldn't be the first choice goalkeeper for me.
You're right.
I disagree with what Les says. The problem we got, Naki Wells, I wouldn't say he's a waste of space. The problem we got is that he's never played in his best position, which is behind the front man. You could play him in the middle.
We don't have the players to get the best out of Naki Wells. He is a good striker by himself. He's got wingers and forward attacking players who play passing football. We haven't played that for years.
He's going to score the goals, Les. That's the only problem.
Well, the problem, what you need to do is get a striker that fits in with Pearson's more direct play. Okay. Naki Wells is a good championship player in the right team. That right team isn't us because of the way we play. Okay. Chris Martin will get us 10 goals a season. Vyman will probably get us 10 goals a season. And if we can get another physical, big attacking striker who can win the long balls and the knockdowns for the oncoming midfielders, we will get goals. Do you know what I mean? I don't think that's an issue. How many goals have we scored this season? What, 5 goals in 4 games, is it? Or is it? You know, that's
scored,
not bad.
Martin's got 2. I think he got 2 in the whole of last season.
Yeah.
He was injured for a third of it, wasn't he?
That's not a bad return. And we're creating chances. We're creating opportunities. We do need a quality striker and some quality service. Like, Wells isn't waste of space. He is a good championship player, but not in the way that we're playing. Put him in the QPR side, he'll do well. We haven't got the ability, we haven't got the manager who's going to play that style of football. So what is the point of having him?
I think the problem is will we get a like for like player who can play with Chris Martin, and will we be able to afford or free up the money to buy another striker? Who knows?
Should we be buying players to go alongside somebody who is, he's doing okay, but he's a 32-year-old Chris Martin whose better days are behind him? And should we be going out looking at new players, which allegedly we are? Ian, there's 5 days. Is it a week left in the transfer window? Is it a week?
10 days.
No, it's 10 days. Tuesday week, 31st of August. Yeah, we're being linked with a Brazilian lad, and clearly there ain't going to be any move. Lansdowne's not going to put his hand in his pocket unless there's outgoings. But if you're Nigel Pearson, are you just going to sort of sit there and accept it for what it is? Because, we need to do something in the transfer market. I mean, Matt Wiv said in one of the text comments earlier on that's up there, we need a right back. Yeah, we need a right back. Yeah.
I've been saying that for ages. We need a right back or a right wing back. Now, if you decided you were going to be a lot more attacking and play wing backs, Sam Pearson could do a job for you at right wing back.
Yeah.
But you have to decide what you want. Do you want a fullback? Because if you want a fullback, he's going to be 80-20 defensively. If you want a wingback, he's going to be 70-30 offensively. Mm. So decide what you want to do. And on that basis, now this thing about Chris Martin's 32. If he's put together the quickest sprint against Reading, then we got a problem.
Yeah, that's straight from the manager's mouth. That is straight from the manager's mouth. That was the quickest one.
I mean, it's
maybe he did one, and that was it.
Yeah, but it's a meaningless stat unless you look at it compared to everybody else and how many he made, as you just said. Now, Dan Bentley made a really good save when we were 1-0 down, blocked a point-blank range effort that would have put Swansea 2-0 up.
Mm.
So he did that. I don't think he's a bad keeper. I think he's a good keeper. Now, what you've got to think is, but every player, it's what people seem to fail to understand, and it frustrates me. Every player at our club is for sale. The only differential is the price. So if somebody comes in tomorrow and says, I'd like Dan Bentley, here's 10 million quid, we'll take him off to the Premier League, Steve Lansdowne will say, thank you very much. And there you are, Nigel, you can have 5 million of it off to strengthen your team. Now, financially, and Martin can also play next to a big striker. He's done that before. He did it.
Well, as you told me, and how old is he? 5'10". He's not a big.
No, he's not. He's not like a Matt Smith tall, Michael Smith. Sorry, even Matt Smith, who played for us. He's a monster. But you have to do if you're going to play. And we played a lot of long balls up to Martin, and Swansea had all. Obviously seen what he did at Reading and thought we're not going to let him bring the ball down. So whenever he went for it, it was the same when we tried to knock the ball of Oyman. He was covered in Swansea players. They thought, just stop the flick on and win the second ball.
Mm.
So you've got to adapt your tactics for it a little bit. And I think if you look at Sheffield United, I think they'd be far more likely to go to a Premier League club and say, please, can we loan one of your goalkeepers? And most Premier League clubs have got at least 5 goalkeepers, if not more. And they'll go in, loan their third choice. And the Premier League club will say, OK, here's a loan fee. Or actually, you can have him, just pay his wages. And they've still got 4 goalkeepers. So I don't see Sheffield United saying, well, we got money, so we must go out and buy a goalkeeper. They'll need a good goalkeeper, but you'll be able to get.
Yeah, they're not having the greatest of starts at the moment, are they? Are they, Sheffield United? They're down in the bottom.
They've had a terrible start, and I'm looking for every week is clubs that are down the bottom and are doing worse than we are, because at the final analysis, that's what will keep us up this year, same as it did last. And you've got Forest are having a bad time. They're talking about
Defeats. Yeah. 4 straight defeats.
Sheffield United have had a bad time. Blackpool aren't great. Millwall, Preston North End, Hull, Posh in Huddersfield, although Huddersfield had a good win today at Sheffield United, who ain't going well.
Yeah.
So,
and you say Blackpool aren't any good. They were 2-0 down. Blackpool were 2-0 down against Bournemouth and come back
to
2-2.
I didn't say they aren't any good. I said they're not going great guns. They're not going well.
They're one of the teams that you would expect to be down there. Yeah, no, I I get that. I totally get that.
When we played them, we were all over them, to be honest. And we should have put the game to bed in the first half. And then second half, this is what City do. We didn't have a shot on target. And it's all very well saying, oh, yeah, it was a lovely touch here. And, oh, that was nice and all the rest of it. And we can't see games out. And last season, right, we scored 46 goals.
Yeah.
Won a game. The only problem is we let in 1.7. Now, even somebody with sort of fifth grade maths will say, well, that's not going to work, is it? And it's not. So we either need to get far better defensively or far better attacking. And this season we got a minus one goal difference. So we're not as bad, but it's still not good.
So can I just jump in a minute?
Right? Go on, Liz. Yeah.
How many saves has Dan Bentley had to make this season? He didn't have a save to make against Blackpool. Against Reading, they scored two goals, fired, but other than that, he didn't have a save to make. He had one save to make yesterday, the goal he didn't have a chance with. Okay. I think we're a lot tighter, more compact, and looking a lot more solid so far this season compared to last season.
Yeah, but Les, that's to say we're better this season than we were the last 30-odd games of last season is a really low bar. I mean, he had two to save it. Burrow didn't save either of them. I'm not saying he should have done. And it was bad defending it, Burrow. It was. So, you know, Reading, we let in two. Burrow, we let in two. Blackpool, we let in a goal in the last.
Forest Green, we let in two. Done.
Yeah, Forest Green.
Ignore that. Well,
Forest Green, I only look at the league games because it's like you say, oh, we played a cup game, we won 6-0, but you've been playing against some non-league side or even Rovers. So you look at it like that, and I don't think our priority is a goalkeeper now, but any offer that comes in for any of our players, Pearson's going to be looking to raise money. And,
yeah.
I mean, Alex Scott only needs one really good season. And somebody said, well, what's a good season? And I said, well, if he could get 8 to 10 goals and 8 to 10 assists, some Premier League club will gamble and give us, I don't know, 15 10, million for him 15. On the basis.
Yeah,
on the basis of potential. And that's what I do. But we're better. People say, oh, well, you know, we've made progress on last season. Last season, we were the worst team in the Championship over the last 33 games. So saying we're better than we were then
is against a low bar. Yeah. But I think the general view, Ian, I think the general view on the game yesterday is that there was a lot of positives, and the weaknesses that are there are becoming more and more evident. And we're talking about the fullbacks, yeah, because all their threats seem to be coming on those sides. And if we had a midfield with a fit Joe Williams in there, you know, that is going to bolster us up. Although the little minutes he has had on the pitch, he's not done anything particularly impressive. I mean, Les, you've seen all the games.
If you look at it, Dave, the big problem is not just the fullbacks. The big problem is scoring goals. And if you look at that, the 11 that started last night, there's no goals in them, or there's not enough goals in them. Let's put it that way.
Well, you did the count. Let me ask Les, you've seen all the games. We've all seen all the games. Do we look, talked about being compact and everything, do we look fitter? A lot was placed, emphasis was placed on things not being great off the pitch in terms of training and conditioning. But for you, do you think the players are more athletic? Are we seeing any benefit from Dave Rennie's stuff that's going on behind the scenes?
Yeah, I think we do look fitter. I think at Reading, we kept going to the end. Swansea, I think we ran out of steam a bit, but it's very difficult when you've got a team who pass the ball very intricately and you're constantly trying to close down space. But you've got to remember, we've actually got some players back. Someone like Weidman, I'd be very surprised if there's a better player in this league but someone who can run and run as much as he can. And we missed him for large chunks of last season. But yeah, I think we do look fitter. The injuries are, impact injuries largely, which is hard to prevent. And I think if you look at someone like Pring and Scott, you can see the difference that between their fitness and perhaps some of the more senior players who perhaps have had a stronger pre-season. So, I mean, it's hard to gauge, but I think we do look fitter than we had done at the end of last season.
Yeah. What do you feel on that one, Mark? Fitness, you know, is it noticeable? Are we going sort of, well, we've not been able to see games out. that implies lack of fitness, but probably implies lack of nous, really, more than fitness. How would you view the fitness as you see it?
Yeah, I mean, I think apart from maybe the last 10 minutes against Blackpool, I think we looked pretty good fitness-wise. I mean, we played with an intensity. We're putting more energy in. We're making more tackles. We're turning the ball over better, and we're looking better as a unit. I thought the football in the first half an hour last night, we looked very fluid going forward. You know, there's the fullback supported the midfield, played it down the channels, excellently getting the ball into the box, and recovered well when we were at a position to defend the goal. Apart from, you know, the 20th minute when we were the victim of our own undoing. But it's just, it is, the problem is scoring goals. We should have set the foundation for what was, I think, was going to be a good win by scoring those early goals like we did against Reading the other night. That was
like we should have done against Blackpool as well. So all if we'd have knocked it away, we could have been 2-0 up inside 20 minutes.
But the difference between the Blackpool game and last night was light years in terms of intensity. We plodded against Blackpool the way we passed the ball around. We were much sharper in our passing and in our forward play than we were against Blackpool. We got the midfield pivot right with James and Masengo. And Masengo. That was the difference.
Yeah, yeah. Ian, one of the talking points... So I'll come to you next, Ian, on, well, a different talking point, unless you wanted to add something to what Mark has just said. What's your talking point?
Well, I wanted to develop this point on goals. So I've looked at the scoring records of the players that started last night. Okay? So those would be Vyman, Martin, Scott, Simpson, De Silva, Kalas, Atkinson, James, Masengo, Pring. Right? That's the 10 outfield players. Over a season, if they played every single game and they scored at their current average, all right, they get you 25 goals.
Yeah.
That's it. Now, if you can, and some of them have got dreadful scoring records and aren't going to get you any goals.
Well, you say Kalas is 1 in 188, isn't it? Or something like that, yeah?
No, Kalas is 1 in 88.
1 in 88.
Danny Simpson is 1 in 321.
Yeah.
But Masengo disappoints me because he's a player of ability. And he's got no goals, no assists in 42 games. Now, you can't look at that and say, well, we don't need a striker. But you say, well, okay, then. We're going to bring Naki Wells in. Naki Wells is a second striker.
Yeah.
Because
his record over the last 4 years, bar, and it's lifted by that one season at QPR when we signed him halfway through. Naki, over the last 4 years, is like a 1 in 4, which is, you know, not as good as Dele Alibola was when we signed him.
Well, he's a 1 in 3, but for example, you've got Semenyo is a 1 in 14.
Mm.
So Chris Martin's a 1 in 6, and Andy Vyman's a 1 in 4. Now, 1 in 4 sounds fine, but that gets you 12 goals a season. So if Vyman and Martin get 20 goals between them this season,
yeah,
we need another 26 goals from somewhere else to be scoring at a goal a game.
Yeah.
Now, that's not good enough. Unless you've got the tightest defence that we've ever had in our lives.
Yeah.
Then Matty James, somebody's on here talking about Matty James set pieces. Yeah, very good. And I take the point, we've got better delivery than we've had for ages. Matty James will get one goal every 16 games. That's career. So that's 3 a season.
Yeah. Now, no, you're right. I mean,
you'll probably get a dozen assists.
Yeah.
But that, and it's not as simple as that. But football's about scoring goals.
Of course it is. And if Dave was on here, if Dave Fevers was on here, if Dave Fevers on here, he might be saying, oh, it's a little bit simplistic. But it's not. Just based on track record in their careers, unless somebody does a Bobby Reid who went from nothing to prolific goal scorer in that 2017-18 season. You're absolutely right, Ian. Unless something changes, we're not going to score enough goals. Let me change the subject a bit. I'll come back to you on that. I'll speak to all three of you on this. I'll go to Les first. Les, one of the things we said on the pod for the last 18 months or however long we've been doing it since summer of last year is that we haven't notice the referees in matches. You know, the matches have been, you know, we've not said about the referees. And this season on the televised matches, certainly we've been using VAR, there seems to be a better interpretation of the law. Last night's referee, somebody said, I blamed him for us losing. No, I didn't. I think it was Alan Payne said that. But last night's referee, you know, he put, what was it, six of ours, six of theirs, four of ours. And some of his decisions were, well, it provoked the crowd. Or was it that the crowd were in a vociferous mood and that's why we noticed the referee more? But did you think he had a bit of a mare compared to what we've become used to?
I thought he was poor. I think it was poor. I don't think he necessarily made decisions that cost us the game as such, but he wanted to even things up. So when they got two bookings, which were bookings, he then straight away gave Danny Simpson a yellow card for nothing. There was just nothing there. And I thought he lost control of his own decision-making. I thought he was really poor. I don't think he gave Chris Martin enough support. I thought Chris Martin was kicked to shit yesterday.
He was handled off the ball once, in the second half. He was just blatantly pushed.
He was absolutely battered throughout the whole game, and he gave him no protection whatsoever. I just think he is a poor ref. He's got a reputation, Elgingham, for being poor. And I just thought he needs to take a step back, look at what's going on, and make a decision based on merit, not based on evening things up. And I thought, you know, there weren't any big major decisions for him to make. And if there were, I'd have absolutely no confidence that he would have gone and made the right decision based on yesterday.
No. Mark, what were your thoughts on the ref?
I thought he was pretty poor. Like Les said, I mean, I think Vyman ran, you know, got the wrong side of him when he took on the centre back and was put, well, six of one and a half dozen together, and Vyman got booked, and I think Martin got booked for arguing his case straight after as well. I think Atkinson was a little bit unlucky on Laird, but they were in there to kick some of our players. And theirs were deserved. I think they had four for fouls and two for time wasting. I think Jake Bidwell got booked because he was hanging onto the ball for about 5 minutes, it seemed, every time he took a throw in. And the same with the goalkeeper, Bender. He was taking ages to take kicks. So he got fed up and booked both of those. But sometimes you see some of these fouls, and I saw one for Barnsley today. It makes you yearn for sin bins. You know, when
it was interesting. I'm glad you said that one about Barnsley today, because I watched a bit of that. And good old Corley Woodrow, we thought he was crap, didn't we? Yeah, but he's not done too bad since he finished with us. But maybe it's the service these strikers get. But there was one tackle that a Barnsley bloke did. I think it was, is it Styles, when a QPR bloke was racing through, and he took one for the team in a way that Masengo should have done for the Liam Moore burst from the middle on Tuesday night, but that was, you know, he wasn't going to get sent off for taking the bloke out on our halfway line.
That's what I yearn for. The football needs sin bins to cut those sort of cynical fouls out, because defenders know that all they're going to get is booked unless the player is in a goal scoring position, if he's the last man. Otherwise, you've got. I mean, it's awful. You know, it doesn't happen in. You know, it doesn't happen in. I think rugby union is refereed far far better. You know, foul attack. I mean, the referees are giving fouls retrospectively, but this take one for the team. It's ridiculous. It's ridiculous. You know, you can foul cynical fouls. You can get away with. You shouldn't be allowed to do that. The side committing the foul should be punished appropriately, and they're not.
Yeah. Ian, Russell Martin, he's been labelled as one of these bright up and coming managers, a name that was mentioned when we got rid of Holden. Les said at the start of the podcast that Swansea are a team going through transition. I didn't like their time wasting, and there were aspects of their play that were just narky. Do you think they've made a good choice in Russell Martin? And you talk about bringing players on. I think he brought somebody from MK who was either their fullback or their winger, who had a very good game. But what do you think of Russell Martin? Do you think he'll do a good job for Swansea?
I've no idea, but Swansea have a type, don't they? And their judgment over the years, and I know it's not the same people doing it, has been very good. When you look at the managers they've had and the managers we've had, there's no comparison. And that's why Swansea have done so much better than us. You know, you've got to look at it. I remember going over to the Vetchfield, beating them 5-0, Bob Taylor getting a hat trick.
Yeah.
And, you know, their ground was literally falling apart and they nearly went out of business. All of a sudden, they got a brand spanking new stadium. They got Laudrup, Brendan Rodgers, Martinez as managers.
Yeah.
And they do pass the ball. And they always have passed the ball and played good football. And, how well will he do? No idea. Because sooner or later, the parachute money runs out. They've had to let players like Ayu, who was reportedly earning 60 grand a week, go because the money's running out. And it's just, can I just make a quick point as well that, you know, our money, we've never had parachute money, but our money is tight. And I think having circa 250,000 from pay on the day and from the Swansea fans, possibly including VAT, is a welcome boost on top of the season ticket money that the club's already got. But in the last 10 years, up into the last official set of accounts, which was 1920, the 2021 ones will get pushed into the 21-22 ones under financial fair play. We've lost 104 million in the last decade. Now, before somebody says, yeah, but we built a ground, it doesn't include any of that.
No.
This is just on football. Now, there's lots of people saying, sell this bloke, sell that bloke, sell the other bloke. Well, somebody's got to want them first, and they've got to be, the player's got to be prepared to go. And if I was Naki Wells, and I'm earning 20 grand a week down the City ground, and I'm getting signing on bonuses, right, and somebody comes along and offers me 15 grand a week, I ain't going anywhere.
No.
And people say, well, all you do is sell Naji and you do. Well, yeah, but what if nobody wants him? What do you do then? Force somebody to take him? And as for saying sell somebody and it just gives you wages, you've got, unless you bring in loans, that's the only way that works. If you bring in loans and then what you get for the player makes up their wages. And that's only going to work for a season or whatever.
So, and that's where
there's a load of thinking that's got to go into it. It's not as simple as saying sell him. So, you know, I heard these stuff on Twitter. Sell him, and then sell him. It's easy.
Somebody's got to buy them. And this is the legacy. Yeah. This is the legacy.
Clearly it's not.
Of Mr. Mark Ashton, who seems to be doing a wonderful job for Ipswich, who are still without a win in the league, right? But all those players that people are saying sell, which is Naki Wells, Naj, Taylor Moore, one or two others, they're all bought by our friend, our erstwhile friend, Mr. Ashton. Okay, I've got to read you this. Hang on a minute.
Before you go any further, I'm not letting Steve Lansdowne out of jail scot-free, and I'm not letting Lee Johnson out of jail scot-free.
No, because Lee Johnson, they're all culpable.
Agreed.
It's
not culpable. Lee Johnson had final say on all incoming players. So if he didn't want somebody, he didn't have them. So all this old blame Ashton, that's pants. And don't forget, Steve Lansdowne signs off all major expenditure. So it's down to him as well. Now, I don't want Mark Ashton back. Didn't like him when he was here. But let's just be a little bit focused.
No, you're right. We should be spreading it around a bit. But you're absolutely
COVID,
right.
COVID's also affected income, like you said.
That's created a stagnant market. The only teams who've got money
are the teams in the Premier League. The relegated teams are probably the only... Any teams that have got money to spend.
Exactly. Correct. No, you're absolutely right. I've got to read you this. This was from a Brentford friend of mine who I've known 25 years, and obviously he's same age as me, so he didn't see them 74 years ago. I had the joy, along with well, certainly you and me, and you, Mark, as well, seeing City 76 to 80 when we reached the top. And this is, he sent me this last night. He said, "Hi, Dave, watching your game, I have to say two ordinary championship teams will be closer to the bottom than top of the league. You need a quick winger, a centre forward, and an attacking midfielder. Swansea, time wasting as usual, but this season with a poorer side, so maybe more understandable. You could try and get Force on loan from us. He'd do better for you than Martin." And then he said, after the game, he said, "Dave, just listen to Pearson. Sorry, mate, he's deluded. You never look like winning the game." And then I said, "Started well until the goal." And he said, "Look lethargic, to be honest, Martin. To be honest, mate, Martin, too old and slow. Vyman looks good, but so many ordinary players. Sad to say, don't see you anywhere near playoffs this year. And Pearson sitting in the stand. Sorry, mate, he's a dinosaur." Les, this business sitting in the stand. Now, Pearson said, managers go on, this is what he said at the pensioners do. He said, managers go on the touchline, and not a senior red, sorry. Managers go on the touchline, and it's part of the theatre. Because you remember how we used to say in years gone by, Danny Wilson used to lean against the old dugout and not look interested. I mean,
and two teeth are two gum, didn't they?
Yeah. What do you think, Les, of the manager being sat in the director's box and watching from afar? You know, I mean, it's his way of doing it. Has he done it before? What do you think of it as a concept?
I think, well, he's done it throughout his career, hasn't he? And I've got no issue with it, as long as if we are starting to get overrun, he comes down, which I believe he does, and gets on the touchline. So he's kind of doing both. You do get a much better view of the pitch. You get a much greater insight into what's going on when you're higher up in the stand. So I've got no issue with it at all. Can I just go back to what you were saying about players and them not leaving? Adam Nadj, right? He's out of contract in the summer, I believe, 2022. Is that correct?
Yes, he is.
He is. Let's say we got no interest. There's no interest in them at the moment. The chance of a deal getting done in the window, this window, is slim. Basically,
pretty much gone. Yeah.
Let's say there's very little interest. Can we pay him off?
Well, can we let him go on? Well, can we let him? If you look at it,
Is the money there? Can we afford it?
Pay him off. Let me say this.
It's hypothetical.
Yeah, no. If we let Nadj, if you look at it from pure cash terms, right? If we let Nadj go on a free, somebody may. If we're hanging on for $500,000 for Nadj, we ain't going to get it. But if we let Nadj go on a free, right, it's a paper loss if he's valued at anything in the books, but it's money that is not going out the door in wages. To pay him off, if he's on 10 grand a week and he's got 40 weeks left on his contract, that's 400 grand, right? Yeah. But if you let him go now, right, you've, in the books, you've got a paper loss, and I don't know how that affects FFP. I'm sure Dave would know all that. But if you let him go now, you save 400 grand in wages, or you allow 400 grand in wages to be spent on somebody else. Yeah. So,
he's going to do all that for nothing, is he?
Who?
He don't want anything. Nadj. He's just going to walk away and say, "That's it. Forget the 400 grand. I'll go somewhere else.
But if somebody, he could get another club.
100 grand for the same
another
period.
Club. No, another club could think, well, if we pay for Nadj, he's going to want, we got to give the football club a fee, and Nadj will want a signing on fee, and he'll want a wage. But if we take one of those things out of the equation, which is our fee, so yeah, maybe they still have to pay him $500,000 signing on fee or whatever, right? Or they double his wages and don't give him a signing on fee. He isn't a cost to us. It's a paper loss of probably 600,000, to call it a three quarters of a year's contract. Yeah, paper loss of about 600,000, but in pure cash, it saves money. Oh, sorry, it's not a drain on the bank account.
If he wants away, though, is there a scenario where they could agree a severance package?
But he's not going to.
This is just hypothetical.
Of course,
isn't it?
Course he can, and we've done that before with players. You know, you say, "Well, you've got a year left on your contract. We'll pay you after that if you go now." and we'll give you
that probably happened with Chris Brunt last season. Chris Brunt probably said, look, I'm not
Chris.
I think he took the initiative there, though, didn't he? And said, Chris, there's no point in me playing for you.
Chris Brunt didn't have a. We paid him up to the day he left. That was it. He didn't go off out with any money or whatever, and that's been documented.
Yeah.
So if I'm Adam Nash and you say, right, you can go and sign for Verona in Italy, because apparently that's where he wants to go. So you say, right, you can go and sign for Verona. They're going to pay you half what you're on here. And what do we do? Do we give him the extra half up front just so he goes? And then what money have we got left to pay the bloke that comes in?
Because if you pay him off,
we want somebody better than him.
Yeah. Well, we've got that problem.
I mean, right, you might get somebody who costs less.
But Ian, we haven't only got that problem with Nash, we've got that problem with Palmer, Wells, and Taylor Moore, who's probably on the lowest wage. So we've got four players there that they ain't going out the door. If any one of those four goes, I'd be surprised.
Yeah? You pay them. It's no good saying pay them off, because that all you're doing there is paying what they're going to get over a year, 2 years.
Yeah. No, I'm not saying pay them off. I'm not saying pay them off, right? You could do a deal with them and you could say, look, we'll cancel your contract. We'll give you half, right? And that's better than nothing. They have to go out and get a better deal. And if nobody's coming for them now.
Dave, it's COVID. We've had COVID, right? No one's got any money. And you're asking a young man who's got a contract to walk away from it. I know what I'd tell you if you asked me to do that, and it wouldn't be polite.
No.
I mean, if somebody wants Taylor Moore, and let's say you said, right, you can go on a free, he's still going to want decent wages. And okay, Taylor Moore goes, and you've got his wages to spend on somebody else, and you're going to get another player like Taylor Moore.
Yeah.
Unless you're lucky and you get somebody from a Rotherham or a Gillingham or something like that, and those players, you get a diamond, and that can happen.
Yeah, and to be honest, we would sooner see. I think we're in agreement on this. We would sooner see Sam Pearson given a tryout as a right wing back than going out and gambling or getting a second rate, half rate player from Rotherham. Because as the manager has said, he doesn't want to bring in players that aren't better than what we've got. And that was the bloody problem with Lee Johnson and his clubs in the bag. Because how many players did he get? And as you say, and he signed all the transfers off. Yeah, so he is culpable in this with the help of Mr. Lansdowne and the advice of Mr. Ashton. But, we want to either give youth a chance or not go gambling on more second raters. You know, and why Simpson got a contract, God only knows.
The plan for the next 2 years is to stay in this division. That's it. Anything else good that happens will be a happy accident. What we can't afford to do is get relegated.
Yeah.
Right. Because
yeah.
You're talking about your TV money going down from the thick end of 9 million to 1 million.
Yeah.
Right. So if that's a thumping great loss. And I'm sorry to go on about it, but all he's asked Pearson to do is where they got this 3-year plan for. Basically, we've got 2 years of standing still, not doing much. And then by year three, Steve Lansdowne feels we will have recovered enough financially. Borrowing a massive sale or something, if AC Milan come in for Calas tomorrow and give us 25 million quid, then all the rules change. But that ain't going to happen.
No,
I don't think
no.
So that is what he wants. And Nigel Pearson said, right, provided we don't get relegated or we don't look like we're getting relegated, you've got a job for the next 3 years. The next two will be building something that you think in year three we can have a right go. And that's what the strategy is now.
And I think he's bought into that. Yeah, and I'll be honest, Ian. I think Les, Mark, if you agree with this, I think there was sufficient there in last night's performance that we are better placed to stay up than we looked towards the tail end of last season. You know, there has been an improvement. Les, would you agree with that?
That's low bar.
No, we've said that. I mean, have you seen enough to think that, you know, our predicted position now, I think, is probably 14th to 18th, something like that. Les, would you agree with that, roughly? Yes or no? 14th to 18th as a position? Are you still there, Les?
We scared him off.
He's gone. Yeah, I think he dropped out. Mark, I'll ask you the question. 14th to 18th?
Yeah, if we play with that intensity, we know we're going to make mistakes. We're bringing young players through. But if we play with that mentality and we, you know, we're as fierce as we can be and we start putting the ball in the net, then I think we'll stay out. I haven't got any worries unless we have another calamitous set of injuries. But with Mr. Rennie, hopefully we turn the corner with that and we'll keep the majority of the best players fit.
Yeah. All right. Okay. Just to wrap up, guys, and I think we covered what we think about Cardiff next week. It's early days. There's only four seasons gone. I'll ask Ian. Four games gone. I'll ask.
It feels
you,
like four seasons, Dave.
Yes, it does. 2017-18 does seem a long time ago. Right. Top six for me. Four games gone. Right. And I just want you to challenge any of these selections, but based on money, early season form and what have you, my top six, West Brom, in no particular order, West Brom, Fulham, Stoke, Bournemouth, Birmingham and QPR. Yeah. Mark, any of those you want to substitute? I know it's early days, but I'll write this down, keep it on a piece of paper. That's my top six. Any of those that you would say I've got wrong? Or you would challenge?
I mean, I'd expect Fulham and West Brom to go straight back up, and I think they're showing that they're, you know, they mean business. They're beating teams quite easily now after they both, you know, they I think West Brom threw it away against Blackburn today, but after their first game draw, Fulham have been beating teams quite easily. Stoke has surprised me, but
West Brom won today. West Brom did win.
I thought they drew with...
No, it's 2-1 at Blackburn. Yeah,
I thought they drew 2-2. Sorry, won the day. No. Apologies. Yeah. Well, they'll go straight back up. I thought Barnsley might be competitive again for, you know, but I mean, it's very early days.
It is. I'm playing safe with that.
Even with Sheffield United, I mean, I remember years ago, I remember Sunderland's... They had Niall Quinn as manager and lost their first four games. And then they brought in Roy Keane and they ended up winning the championship in the end. The same thing happened with Palace when they lost their first four games. They got in the playoffs quite easily. Things can change very easily in the championship. Yeah.
Okay, Les has sent me a little text to say he's had to go. It's probably tea time. And it is that for me as well. Ian, top six in no particular order. West Brom, Fulham, Stoke, Bournemouth, Birmingham, QPR. Anybody that you would take out anybody of those that you would take out and substitute with who?
Well, I quite fancied five out of the six. Birmingham are the ones that have surprised me because they've still got financial issues, I'll call it. Somebody might say, well, aren't we all? But I think it's subject, Fulham and West Brom definitely because of the parachute money.
Yeah.
And I think it's subject to three things: injuries, departures, and additions.
Yeah.
So if we were able to go out and buy two or three really good players, it could totally change our team and totally change our season. I don't think we will. But I think some of the other clubs, Sheffield United, for example, who've got off to a stinking start, they've got money from the Ramsdale sell and they've got an experienced manager and they might bring in three or four people next week that completely change their season. So, you know, that's the injuries, like as you can see from us last season, injuries, departures and additions.
Yeah.
And I think when you look at those things, we'll have a better idea after 10 games. I'd like to, you know, take a look at it in blocks of 10, So you've got 10 game. You've got six league games time. Then you've got Christmas, really, and you've got the other transfer window opening.
And then you've got your other bits and pieces.
But yeah, I mean, I think it's.
I'm not going to be far away.
You look at the likes of Bournemouth. No. They just added Gary Cahill at centre back, but they've lost Dan Juma. He went to Villarreal, didn't he? A couple of days
million
ago.
Quid. Yeah, you're right. You're right, guys.
Well, somebody just made a point and said Cardiff won't be far away. I think, you know, I think you're right. They've got an experienced manager who's been there, seen it, and done it. And, you know, I think they're in a better place in terms of the squad than, or their first team, than we are at the moment.
Yeah, no, that's true. So
He did a great job at Ipswich on a shoestring.
And he's experienced. He's an old head. So it's Cardiff away. And, you know, where are we now? 4 points from four games. Is that right? Yeah. So Cardiff away. 5 points from four games. 5 points from five games if we get a draw. 7 points from five games if we get a win. Four from five. You just don't know way. You don't know which way it's going to go. More likely to be four from five. But then I think, Mark, correct me or Ian, if you know, we've then got two home games against Preston and Luton. Correct?
Yeah, Preston, who you know, they've really struggled.
Preston on the 11th, and then Luton on a midweek game, then away at QPR. So, as I say, no easy games in the Championship. Guys, we'll do this same time next Saturday, because it's a lunchtime kickoff. Yeah, so we'll assess the Cardiff game. Enjoy the rest of your weekends. Yeah, it's been a bit wet today, but... you know, there was I actually enjoyed it last night for part of the game, and it gave me a little bit of hope. And hopefully, we've been not negative, but as we always seem to do on here, and I think people respect us, we call it as it is. Guys, thanks a lot. Enjoy the rest of your evening. All right, all the best.
Thanks very much. Yeah. Take care, both of you.
Speak soon.
Best for next Saturday. Take care.
Hopefully, cheers, boys. Bye. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.